This is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Is your zip code your destiny? Well, in San Antonio, it may well be. We live in a metro area that has multiple studies that have identified as one of, if not the most economically segregated cities in the nation. That means the rich live on their side of town and everyone else lives someplace else. This drives education, access, transportation, healthcare, economic opportunity, access to healthy food, crime patterns, and life expectancy. And there is a clear pattern of between where you live and where you vote in San Antonio. So how did this happen? And is this something that needs to be changed? Colin, we want to hear from you. What do you think about San Antonio being ID'd as the most economically segregated city in the nation? The number is 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org. We're joined this half hour by Christine Drennan. She's the director of the Urban Studies Program at Trinity University, and also Steve Glickman, the executive director at the Economic Innovation Group, which generated the Distressed Community Index, which is being used to ferret out this information about economic segregation in San Antonio. Welcome to The Source, both of y'all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Steve, since y'all produced this report, tell me more about it.
Sure. Thanks for having me on. And just as a little context, my wife is from San Antonio. We actually got married in New Braunfels, so this is something near and dear to our hearts. The Distressed Communities Index was put together to evaluate economic and community well-being across the country. So we looked at just about every zip code covering 99% of Americans, and we gave them a score based on how they did on a number of criteria: education, poverty rate, the employment rate, housing, income. And once we tabulated all these scores, we looked at how cities did based on how many of those zip codes they contained that were either doing really well or really poorly. And San Antonio has the unique distinction of being the most economically unequal city in the country, according to our analysis, which means that you have a number of very wealthy zip codes and a number of very distressed zip codes sitting right next to each other. In particular, in San Antonio, you see the kind of north and the northwest suburbs of San Antonio are doing among the best in the country in terms of their economic well-being. And then if you look at the center of the city in San Antonio, places that are just west of the Riverwalk, but really all clustered around downtown San Antonio, you see some of the most distressed communities in the whole country.
When you look at the city, are you looking at the city proper, or are you looking at the metropolitan area?
We do both, but in this particular analysis, we're talking about San Antonio, the city proper, which is quite widespread. When you look at the metropolitan area, you get a very similar results for San Antonio. It comes within the top five metropolitan areas in the country in terms of this economic inequality among neighborhoods.
So Christine Drennan over at Trinity University, what do you make of this study?
I think it's a great study, and the data is fantastic, and I congratulate you on that. But the interesting thing comes in the analysis. So for perspective, I'm from Rochester, New York, and Rochester is probably one that gets a really high level of distress, but probably not in terms of spatial inequality. And that's because Rochester is fairly homogeneous within and is surrounded by really complicated suburban structure, and the wealth has moved into the suburbs. So when we look at San Antonio, the political geography is really different. The footprint is enormous, and so the city itself encapsulates both the wealthy and the distressed communities. So when we do the math, we do look like we're more spatially segregated. But when we compare it in another way to cities like northern cities, we may not be. And it also, because all of us reside within the same political geography, it gives us an opportunity to actually do something about the inequality that you've documented so well, because we vote together.
Well, I mean, you don't have to have a report like this to see that this is an issue in San Antonio. You can just drive from one side of the town to the other, you know, from one side of Zarzamora, and you can just go all the way down, and you see that it's there. That is a vastly different than if you're going up the Wurzbach Parkway or something. It looks like they're two different planets, not just two different cities. But they're all under this one roof of San Antonio. And it becomes a challenge. We've seen this in our mayoral races, particularly when it comes to how are we going to find a person who's going to represent all of these people and all of their very varied interests. So Steve, talk about that. When, you know, how do we use your report to try and tease that information out?
So it's a good question. Let me give you paint a little picture of what the impact of inequality is on communities and how we tell whether communities are unequal. If you take one part of San Antonio that scores really well, the zip code is 78258, and you look at the indicators, the percentage of adults in that community of about 42,000 people that don't have a high school degree is 2%. If you go almost right next door to 78207, another 50,000 people or so, the percentage of adults without a high school degree is 47%. The poverty rate in that more distressed area is 42% versus 4%. The business and job creation is negative in that distressed zip code. They've lost jobs over the last 5 years, almost 5%. And in that really prosperous zip code, they've gained 24% in jobs. So you're living two different economic realities, and it's almost as if it's two separate countries right next door to each other, and it plays out in a lot of different ways. We're seeing the way it plays out nationally right now. If you look at what happened Super Tuesday, we've done a little bit of number crunching, and the more distressed areas of the states that voted on Tuesday tended to come out for someone like Trump, or were more likely to. And so a lot of this economic anxiety seems to be feeding into more of the economic populism you're seeing as a trait of this election cycle, because people feel like their policymakers and their representatives aren't being responsive to their concerns, because the economic recovery, although nationally we've recovered quite a bit, in those communities, they haven't felt any recovery. In fact, those communities have gotten a lot worse over the last 5 years. So you see two totally different feeling about how well they're being represented in Congress, and it applies locally as well.
Did you want to follow up real quickly, Catherine? Mm-hmm. Christine?
Yeah, two things in addition is that Steve has said that they're almost like two separate countries, and you know, and that's a fun metaphor, but they are two separate school districts. And we're horribly segregated by school district, and that's part of what you're seeing here. And again, but it still gets back to this, to one of the questions, is that we still share the same political geography, and we can do something about it at the city level.
All right, we're going to continue our conversation as we talk about economic segregation in San Antonio. We'll try to tease out what are the causes and what are some possible cures, I don't know, solutions, something, policies that can be adopted maybe. This is The Source on KSTX. The number to call in is 210-614-8980. Back in 1 minute. Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. San Antonio, one of the most economically segregated cities in the nation. That's a fact. That means those with wealth tend to cloister in their areas, and the low income, they live someplace else. The zip codes tell the story of a tale of two cities, one rich, one poor, but both under the banner of San Antonio. Joining me to talk about this, Christine Drennan. She is the director of Urban Studies Program at the Trinity University, and Steve Glickman, Executive Director of Economic Innovation Group, which generated the Distressed Communities Index. And let's get to the callers. The number is 210-614-8980, and Steve is on the line. Hi, Steve. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hello, sir. Thank you very much for taking my call. I wanted to immediately disagree with Ms. Drennan that we are unified politically under San Antonio. For someone who's lived here for over 30 years, there is definitely not a political unity. And part of it is education. Part of it is the poverty. And one other thing that I had learned in my studies at UTSA is that also our highway system here in San Antonio also offers that opportunity, because we are separated by 410, by 1604, by different the different highway corridors that help people just be able to go to certain spots, and they never have to drive through our little Mexicos or our barrios, or for lack of a better term, our I don't want to even say it, ghettos. And they can just go to these different spots. You can get to the Dominion. You can get to Stone Oak. You never have to see true San Antonio. So I just wanted to comment on that. And thank you to Mr. Glickman for making this study, because there is definitely a bias here as far as where certain areas have the wealth and the economic growth. Thank you. I'll take any responses off the air.
Okay, Steve, thanks for your call. You want to respond?
Sure. No, it's a great point. And when I say that we're unified politically, what I mean is that we fall under the same city government, and that we have one budget, and that budget is distributed over this enormous place, and so that we could, through the distribution of funds, put them in different places. I completely agree that we are not unified politically, but economically, potentially we could be. Because we have the ability, because we are within the same political unit, we could address some of the segregation that the Glickman report kind of demonstrates.
Okay, we got a call in from a city council member from District 2, Alan Warwick. Let's get him on the conversation. Councilman Warwick, thanks for joining us. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you. I know Dr. Drennan well, and I know the research very well, but I'm curious what their ideas are on the influx of wealth going to the downtown core and the potential moving out of people from the downtown areas to areas that are kind of like the mid-suburbs between 410 and 1604 around the city that don't have the same services that they have downtown, don't have the same access to public transportation and jobs. And I'm curious what that idea is, because I think 1604 is going to be fine, and I definitely know that downtown is going to see development. But those areas in between, I'm curious what their ideas are on those.
Okay, Councilman Warwick, do you want to hang on, or do you want to, join?
Sure, I will hang on. That's
okay.
Fine.
Okay, I'll keep your line going. But Steve Glickman, what do you think?
Well, I think it's a good point, and one where we're really focused. And the area where I think is the most ripe for moving large-scale change in these communities is ones related to investment and access to capital. What you tend to see in these communities that are the most distressed, and that's including that circle right around downtown, which has a lot of investment, and then you go one kind of circle out from there and you don't see a lot of business growth, is a better and stronger public-private partnership where the local government can identify communities that are maybe being overlooked by investors and businesses and create the types of incentives that may draw them to build businesses and create jobs in those areas. It's probably not a problem that the local government can solve all on its own. Even with funding great infrastructure or schools, you need to have new entrepreneurial activity. And this is an element where San Antonio suffers a little bit overall. It is not creating new jobs, new businesses at the same rate you see other big cities. It's creating new businesses more akin to like a Cleveland or a Baltimore, which are really suffering economically, and certainly not as well as just the city next door in Austin, where there's a ton of entrepreneurial activity. Spreading that out to a larger portion of the city and helping to attract new investors and new investments by offering new types of incentives in those communities can make a real difference in their economic turnaround. And it's hard to see how they get there without some kind of program like that.
So am I hearing this, Christine, am I hearing this right, that we have this stratification in San Antonio and concentration of wealth and everything else is low income, and that is a problem in regards to job generation in the city?
Absolutely. Because when someone's looking to come in and is looking for a workforce, looking for a labor force, they will do the statistics on high school graduation rates and literacy rates and all of those things. And what we've found with some of the newcomers, with the new firms that have come in, some of them have brought their own labor force. So and they tend to be located a little bit further out, and it's just like Councilman Warwick said, is that we've got that inner suburban kind of phenomenon that a lot of cities have. And we've got money going into two different places, almost like a donut, right? Okay. Downtown and at the edge.
Let me get a caller. Samir has called in. Samir, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on there.
Yes, thanks for having me. So I've always called, I've been in San Antonio about 30 years, and I've always called it the biggest bubble city I've ever seen. Everyone stays in their bubble. And I actually live in the 5-8 zip code, so I know about Stone Oak, and it's been one of the greatest master plan communities in the United States, and it's very affluent. I own a food truck here in town, and I'm actually friends with Alan. And it's one of those where if it wasn't for that food truck and me going all around the city for my spot, I probably would never have gone to those parts of town. So I'm kind of a living testament of that problem. My question is, with the growth that we're having, especially inside 410, and even in Allen's district is starting to see some growth on the east side, what happens is we're a big service sector job community here, tourists, restaurants, and I remember when rents used to be cheap in this town, and now when I'm looking at rents in this town and what people are paying, especially along the Broadway corridor, it's just crazy to me. And so what happens is you keep pushing all the service sector jobs further. I mean, they still got to come to work downtown or certain areas, but the public transportation, they can't afford to live there anymore. So with all this growth and
Okay, we're losing you, but I think we've made your point. Mm-hmm. Christine Drennan?
Mm-hmm.
Response, anything?
Sure.
I mean, so we've got the workforce, and now we're pushing the workforce further and further out because we're gentrifying, I guess, some people are using for our inner city core neighborhoods, Beacon Hill, Southtown, all these other places. Now you got to take three buses to get to your job, busing tables on the Riverwalk.
Yep, and we're not unique in that. That's a national phenomenon, if not international. And again, it's that inner city. It's what's going on. What we call the inner suburbs. And the problem is, the best example of that for us is transportation. An interesting corollary to that, though, is something like what Houston has done, is they've completely refigured their transportation system along not so much a hub and spoke, which is what ours is, and some of the inefficiency is because of that, but it's networked. And it, you know, it doesn't solve the problem of the economic segregation, a totally different kind of set of solutions. But it does move people around effectively when we've got these kind of these push pull factors of where people are living.
Okay, so if this is a pattern, and the pattern is continuing now, the people who move to San Antonio who are affluent are going to go into these neighborhoods, and other people are going to stay out of those well off neighborhoods. Can this pattern be changed? Have there been cities that have taken on this problem and have been able to adopt policies, seen outcomes, and that can be used as an argument to, this is worth the effort? Steve Glickman?
It's a good question, and the answer to that is absolutely. Let me make one general point, and then I'll give you a couple examples. Business as usual in terms of traditional policy solutions to these problems is just not going to cut it anymore. And you need, in particular, to attract and talk with the private investment community and try to get them engaged in areas they wouldn't normally be engaged. I actually think a local executive investor out in San Antonio, Graham Weston, is starting to do this in very interesting ways around San Antonio and his 80-20 Foundation. I'll give you an example of some other cities which are doing a good job of it. In Detroit, you have a big investor in Dan Gilbert who moved his entire workforce. Dan's the chairman of Quicken Loans and the owner of the Cavs. He moved his entire workforce from the suburbs of Detroit into downtown Detroit, started to buy real estate there and build businesses in downtown Detroit, and it's slowly but surely changing the nature of that city. You see Kevin Plank, the Under Armour CEO, doing that in the really depressed port area of Baltimore, and you see Tony Hsieh, who the CEO of Zappos, who did the same thing. He moved his workforce from the suburbs of Las Vegas into a very rough part in downtown Las Vegas, and that's created the space for young people to move back into the city and for new businesses to take root and start to grow. Something like that has to really happen in a place like San Antonio, in these depressed areas that we're talking about, to really move the needle. You can't just rely on the government to use the same kind of methods that they've used over the past 10 or 20 years to bring forward the kind of radical change you would need.
So let me bring in Councilman Alan Warwick back into this. Councilman Warwick?
Yes, definitely. Definitely. But what happens to those undereducated workforce that are in those neighborhoods that are forced out because that, and they can't get those jobs that are coming into the community? How are we addressing that in that situation? Because I see many new people moving into my district, and if a big employer like that were to move into my district, I think it would actually drive the stress on housing costs up even higher than they are right now, as opposed to giving people the tools that they can to succeed in the changing demographics of their neighborhood that they've been in for, you know, 30, 40 years.
Okay, and Steve, you want to take on that?
Sure, I'll provide a quick answer. It's a very good question, and I think a very common one that we hear. There's been a lot of recent studies that have looked at essentially gentrification of the investments and the rising in housing prices in areas of the country where you see the new investment. And what the studies have shown, many of these studies have shown, is that it tends to benefit everybody, and you don't see a huge amount of fleeing out of those communities, because people stay when they see positive change in the neighborhood. Their home values are also increasing. They're now able to get loans and start businesses because they have some equity and value in their house that they weren't seeing before. New businesses create new jobs across the education spectrum, and it provides new opportunity for people. And when we talk about in this study, spatial inequality, what we're really talking about are opportunity gaps. And a big part of the reason why there are no opportunities in these neighborhoods, it's not just the education of the local workforce, although that's a part of it. It's also the fact that there aren't any jobs at all. There aren't new businesses that are offering opportunities.
Right, and that's a downward slope.
Slope can only be cured if you inject some new capital and new life into those communities.
All right. Steve Glickman, executive director of the Economic Innovation Group, generated a study that identified San Antonio as the city with the most distressed zip codes and community index. Also with us is Christine Drennan, the director of the Urban Studies Program at Trinity University. When we come back from the break, transgender students and Texas sports. Stay tuned.